I say. I don't. I don't. Well, that hardly matters. I'm across the room before I realize it, my hand clawing at headmistress's face. She cries out, and blood streaks over her skin as my nails tear a stripe down her cheek. Reese grabs me around the waist and hauls me back, my legs kicking wildly as she drags me away from headmistress. She's lying, I say. She doesn't know by it. She doesn't understand. I know, Reese says in my ear. You're right. You are. But we don't have time. Like you said, okay? We have to go. Yeah. I swallow hard, force my body to relax. Just one thing first. Dump the bottles. Except one. No, headmistress says. No, no, wait. Reese lets me go. Lets me press my forearm against headmistress's neck. It's over, I say. Behind me, Reese starts pouring out the water. The floor turns dark and slick, and headmistress is crying. By it isn't dead. I won't believe it. Headmistress has lied before, and she could be lying now. I'll find Byatt like I promised I would, and when I do, I'll be able to tell her I did this in her name. I drop my arm from headmistress's throat, reach back toward Reese, and she presses the last water bottle into my working hand. For Byatt, for Mr. Harker, and for us. We were supposed to drink this, I say, holding the bottle up to my lips. She nods. It's what's best for you, headmistress says. You don't want all that pain. I promise it'll be the easiest thing in the world. Yeah. I stare down at the water and lick my lips. When I look back up at headmistress, she's watching me with warmth in her eyes, and she reaches up to touch my shoulder. It won't hurt, she says softly. I lean in close. Prove it. She gasps, and I shove the bottle into her mouth, throw all of my weight against her jaw, holding it open as the water tumbles in. A muffled yell and a whimper as she thrashes under me. Water spilling down over my hand, drenching the front of her shirt. She can try not to swallow, but soon enough she'll have to. Her lips are wet against my palm, but I don't give. Just press harder. Touch my forehead to hers. She did this to us. Now it's our turn. Snot dripping from her nose, and she starts to choke as spasms rack her body. I'm watching her throat, waiting. Waiting. And finally a moan slipping out of her as she swallows. I stay there, hip to hip with her, until she goes limp and I can't hold her up anymore. I step away, let her body drop to the floor, on her hands and knees, gasping for air. She looks small. I can see the narrow taper of her wrists, skin sallow and pale. I crumple the water bottle, toss it down next to her. Leave her, Reese says. And let's go. It's getting nasty out there. I look back at her, confused, and she nods toward the hallway, hit after hit against the double doors closing off the main hall. If the front doors didn't hold, these don't stand a chance. I can hear Julia yelling at the other girls, urging them to keep supporting the barricade. But it's no use. Okay, I say. I hoist the backpack up, staggering a little under the weight of it. But soon it's on and we're heading out of the office. Not a backward glance. Not until we hit the kitchen and I check to make sure none of the other girls is following. Empty space and the sound of screams. We need to hurry. Reese crosses to the emergency exit door, the sign above it dark and cracked. I follow and she goes first, opens the door just a few inches and looks out. Seems clear. I laugh a little. Either way, we're going. She holds out her silver hand to me, and I take it. Stay with me, she says. And I'll stay with you, yeah? I close my eye. Raxter behind me. And who knows what ahead. Chapter 24 The door spits us onto the south side of the grounds. Strong sunlight through the clouds as the morning fills out. Lawn empty ahead of us. Just a few stands of coastal pine between us and the ocean. To my right, across 100 yards of frost-dusted grass, the fence, and the way out.
If we get separated, Reese says, find my house, I'll meet you there.
And then what?
My dad's boat, she says. More like a dinghy, I guess. It's hidden along the shore somewhere.
A crash from inside the house. Maybe one of the doors giving way, and I hear the other girls start to shout. I squeeze Reese's hand. The jets are coming, I think. I hate how it sounds like an excuse.
Count of three, Reese says. Break for the gate.
I nod, and together we whisper. One, two, three. We sprint. So quick I lose my breath. Let my mouth go slack as I throw everything into my legs. Overhead, the first flurry of snow stinging against my cheeks. The backpack is too loose, jerking from side to side, and I stumble. But Reese won't let me fall.
Almost there, she yells.
The fence coming up quick, but I can't stop. I'm tired, so tired, and my legs go loose, my stride turning wild. But at last the gate. We stagger to a stop. My hand is throbbing, and Reese is leaving bloody tracks in the snow, but adrenaline is sharp and bitter in my mouth, the cold waking against my skin. I'm alive. I'm here, and I'm alive. I tighten the backpack straps as Reese slides the pistol out from her waistband. The gate open ahead of us, and she bites her lip against the pane as she lifts the pistol. Her stance and firing hands switch like I taught her, and aims it into the shadow coating the trees beyond the gate.
Just to be safe, she says.
I almost laugh. We take a different route to our house. Keep out of the wilds. Stick to the spidery deer paths that run through the trees. Both of us keen to face the danger we know instead of the danger we don't. The woods are strangely quiet, even for Rackstar. Snow speckled on the ground, falling more thickly than it usually does this early in the winter. We scan the ground closely for tracks. But every time we find some, they're heading away, toward the school. If we're safe out here, it's at the other girl's expense. Eventually, the ramshackle shape of the Harker house is visible ahead. I blink the snowflakes from my lashes and hurry forward, eager for a bit of rest. Reese goes in first, wipes her feet at the door absently, and it makes something clench in my chest. And then she gasps, lets out a sob, and of course, I forgot. Mr. Harker, the body. I rest my working hand on her shoulder, step up next to her, ready to offer some comforting words, but they won't do anything, because crowded around what's left of Mr. Harker are three gray foxes, their mouths dripping black as they rip into his torso.
Get away from him,
she yells, lifts the pistol and fires between the foxes. No aim to speak of, stance in shambles.
Go!
One darts through a hole in the house wall, disappearing into the reeds, but the other two just lift their heads and look at us. Reese doesn't care, though. She stumbles toward the body, batting my hand away from her as I try to hold her back, drops to her hands and knees at her father's feet, one of his boots unlaced, the other with the striped sock peeking above it. The foxes regard her calmly, almost like she's one of them, but when I approach, they skitter away with a high-pitched cry and squirm through the wall. Reese, I say. She sits back on her heels, and I catch the trail of a tear on her cheek before she wipes it away.
Do you mind, she says, if we get out of here?
We head farther west along the coast of the island, and it would be easier going on the beach, but Reese keeps us in the trees, far enough back that we're still under the cover of the branches. Rackstar's edge is shifting here, almost porous. Later, it'll turn to jagged clusters of rock before easing out into marsh at the other end. When we left, I asked Reese where we were going, but she just shook her head and pulled me along. A week ago, I would have called it stubborn, but this is Reese embarrassed because I asked where we're going, and Reese isn't all the way sure. It's the rocks now. Reese is frowning, peering down the shore, taking us out of the trees a few steps at a time.
Almost there,
she says, and I nod. Don't press. She'll find what she's looking for. We keep on, our bodies tense, the backpack heavier on my shoulders with every step. It's quiet, as if everything on the island is hiding from what happened at the house. Once the bear has finished with what's left of us, it'll go after the other animals. We have to get out before this place turns to war. Ree stops suddenly, points ahead of us.
There,
she says. Tucked in between two tall spears of stone, there's a path cleared out, and I can just make out a stretch of shore, the waves stranding nests of seaweed on the sand. And laid out on the beach, barnacles and moss growing over the hull, a dinghy white boat. We head down, careful of the rocks oiled over with sea. Ree holds out her arm and I grab it, let her keep me steady as we pick our way to the shore. The trail breaks off above the sand, and we have to jump down. My boots sink in, leave disappearing footprints behind me. On the horizon, I can see the mainland, empty and black against the sky.
Here, Ree says, gesturing to one of the rocks. I should redo your bandages.
I sit down there, hand her the backpack so she can fish out the first aid kit. The bandages Julia gave me are barely enough to cover half the tears in my hand, and when Ree flips open the kit, I let out a relieved sigh at the sight of a pristine ace bandage. She takes my hand in both of hers, rolling her shoulder to keep it relaxed. The snow, still light but sticking where it lands, sneaks under my collar, hits the back of my neck, and I pull my hood up as she undoes my makeshift binding.
God, you really messed this thing up, she says,
probing my palm softly.
Can you feel that?
Only in spots. She smooths the bandage out and rewraps my hand, careful to avoid the places where blood is already seeping through the first layer of cloth.
What about moving it?
I manage a twitch in my thumb, and Ree smiles. Let's go of me.
That's good, she says. We'll keep trying.
She stands up, packs the first aid kit into the backpack, and I look past her to where the mainland is faint on the horizon. It looks so far, I say.
Maybe 30 miles to the shore?
Ree squints at the horizon.
And then what, once we get there?
I want to go to Camp Nash, I say firmly. That must be where Bayard is, and I'm not leaving her behind. Not even if she really is dead.
Hetty, I'm not doing it. I can't leave her like that.
You don't understand. Ree looks away.
I do, though.
Of course, her dad. I fight back a wave of nausea. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I tilt my head back. Watch the snow come down. I don't want you to think I've forgotten, or that I think it's all okay. I know you're angry, and I know you will be for a long time, and I can accept that.
I am angry,
Ree says slowly,
but I can barely feel it, and I know it'll come back, but I have things to be sorry for, too.
She glances at me. At my throat, and I remember the feeling of her arm pressing hard across it. A week ago, but it seems like years.
There are more important things right now.
I let out a laugh of relief that totters on the edge of tears, and Ree leans in so our shoulders brush.
One of those important things, she continues, is a cure. Nobody's looking for a real one. We know that now.
Maybe we'll find something at Camp Nash, I say. And then I think of Welch on the pier, of what she told me about my parents, of what I said about my dad. Or maybe there's somebody else who can help. Ree frowns.
Who?
My dad. I wonder if he's still stationed in Norfolk. What if he and my mother done with their lives now that they think I'm dead? He's Navy. I mean, not like Camp Nash, but he might know something. And at this point, I think that's all we can hope for. Ree is quiet, and I look away. I know she's thinking about her own dad, and I wait for her to pull herself out of it.
All right,
she says at last.
Buy it, and then a cure.
I zip up the backpack while Ree goes to the boat to turn it over, and in a minute or two, she has it righted and dragged to the water. I can see a rusted outboard motor barely hanging onto the stern. Will it work? I ask. Or do we have to row? 30 miles is far.
Should be all right, Ree says. and my dad always kept a spare fuel can in the lockbox.
I watch as she inspects the oars and lays them across the seats just in case. A strong wave jolts the boat, and I dart back a few steps. I'm a Navy man's daughter. Boats are bigger than this where I come from, stable and wide. Holding together without a tar patch on the stern. Reese laughs, the wind tugging at her braid, and I feel my heart clench. The clouds rippling above us, and the sun dipping below the horizon. The rocks moaning as the wind hollows around them. And I'll never let go of Raxter. No matter how far away I get, it'll never let go of me.
Get in, Reese says, handing me the backpack. I'll push us out.
I climb in and sit quickly, facing the shore, gripping hard at the gunwale. Reese starts to shove the boat farther into the surf until she's knee-deep in the water, and I can feel my stomach start to twist as the boat jerks from side to side.
Okay, she says. Brace yourself. I'm climbing in.
She takes one last step, pushes off as strong as she can, and hoists herself up onto the gunwale. The boat tips wildly to one side as Reese swings one leg over and then the other. I jerk back as the water hits my face.
There,
she says, dropping onto the bench opposite me.
Okay.
You brought half the ocean in with you.
She rolls her eyes. Besides that.
Yeah. The waves are already pushing us back to shore, so Reese adjusts the lever on the engine and yanks the start pole. Nothing happens, but she tries again, and again, and at last it sputters to life, kicking up a spray as we start to hum forward.
All right,
Reese says. I can barely hear her over the engine.
Here we go.
The shore drifts away. Reese never looks back. Chapter 25. We stick close to the north side of the island. Reese is keeping the motor running low to save gas, and we move slowly, the coast slipping by, snow spiraling in gentle gusts, trees lined up next to one another like matches. And then, as the sun nears high noon, the marshland begins, just about half a mile before we reach the point of the island, where the pier juts out. The going is tougher here, with sandbars cropping up in strange places. I squint, scan the shore for the visitor center. Just past it, the ocean floor drops deep, and then it's into open water. Soon enough, there it is. The center is perched on the north side of the island, cut off from the marsh by a thick band of trees. Built to look like a house, coastal and shingled with a viewing porch, and a boxy addition off the back, for maybe a decade ago when the tourism board decided to try to go modern. But today it looks practically shapeless, draped over in some sort of tent. I sit up straight, rub at my eye, blink hard, and look again. There's the radio antenna, poking through, but the rest of the building is tented, its edges catching in the breeze.
Stop, I say.
And Reese flips a switch so the motor idles.
What is that? She asks. That place should be empty.
The tent doesn't seem to cover the whole building, but I can't tell from here. I've seen things like that for fumigation, for keeping buildings isolated. But why would it be here? And it clicks into place. A boat left the dock that night at the Harker House. But it didn't make for Camp Nash. It came here. We always thought they were on the mainland, I say. The Navy, the CDC. But they weren't. They've been on Raxter this whole time. I turn to Reese. That's who I heard Welch talking to on the walkie. They're the outpost. Think about it. There's no way they'd bring infected material to the mainland.
So they send a unit here instead.
Reese frowns.
It makes sense. But they're risking their own contamination.
A trade-off. Their own safety for access to materials. Access to us. And when they're ready to test a cure, they ask for a live subject. And they get one. I lean forward, send the boat rocking to one side. That's where Byatt is. I know it. Reese takes the boat around the point of the island and aims for the pier. The moorings are all long gone, and we don't have any rope, so she heads for the shallows, noses it into the marsh. She lets me get out first, says she'll keep the boat balanced while I do. The water's muddy here, and I can't see the bottom, but it can't be that far down. I get astride the gunwale, the boat tipping as I let more of my weight slide over the edge, and then there's the water closing cold over my legs as I push off the boat and land in the reeds. It only comes halfway up my calves, but it's a wrenching cold, worse than any day we've had so far. I shiver violently, remind myself not to make a break for the shore and to hold the boat so Reese can get out. She slings the backpack over her good shoulder and slips over the side easy, like she's done it 1,000 times, and of course she has. She sloshes around to the stern and pushes while I guide the boat from the bow. Together we get it beached, a foot or two above the waterline. The ground between here and the visitor center is mostly marsh, with almost no cover before we hit the trees keeping the center out of sight. We stay off the boardwalk, stay low to the ground, creep through the gnats and the stink only just dusted with white. Safer that way. But I feel hot, my skin crawling, and sweat is fresh on my upper lip. Maybe the jets aren't coming. And maybe they haven't been evacuated. And maybe they're still here. Things keep shifting in the corner of my eye. I keep hearing the click of a safety releasing. A reed snaps behind me and I flinch, drop to my knees. They're coming. It's over. It's over.
Hey.
I just hope they do it quick. Put the bullet between my eyes. I won't fight it. I've earned it. I deserve it. But please don't make me wait.
Hetty, Jesus, you're burning up.
I feel it then. A hand on my forehead and I blink hard. Reese, it's Reese. And she maneuvers me to sit, my chin to my chest, the ground damp and seeping underneath me.
We should take a break,
she says as she roots through the backpack for the first aid kit.
You need rest.
I'm fine. Reese throws the first aid kit down, a bottle of aspirin slipping out and into the mud.
It's not enough,
she says, anger tearing at her voice.
What will any of this do?
When she helps me up, we leave the first aid kit behind. At last, we're across the marsh and in the trees, picking our way through them until we come out the other side and see the visitor center looming, plastic tent whipping in the wind. The walkway is just ahead, the flagstone path sneaking out from beneath the tent. I know I should have some sort of plan, some special way to sneak in, but my hand hurts, and I'm so tired, and all I can think to do is lift the tent and duck under it. Reese swears behind me, and then she's following. The plastic drops down behind her, sealing us into the stifling dark. We pause for a moment, in case somebody comes running. But there's only silence, and if the jets are on their way, the research team must have already evacuated. The center's double doors are an arm's length away. I reach out, pull lightly on the handle, and it opens with a squeak. Should we just go in? I ask. Reese shrugs, her shoulder brushing mine.
What? Do you want to knock?
Inside, the main lobby looks the way it did on my first day at Raxter. Faded and yellowing, the walls painted with abstract shapes and shades of green and blue. We cross the room to the reception desk, which is long enough for 3 or 4 people. Only one chair behind it, and most of the surface covered by wilting catalogs about the area's recreational points of interest.
It's so quiet, Reese says, and so warm. Do you think anybody's here?
I think of Headmistress, promised a way out and then left behind. No, they must have evacuated. I lean over the desk, pick through the catalogs, but there's nothing important, nothing to help us find Byatt.
Where would they put her?
I say, turning to Reese. They'd need a big enough room.
There's an event room at the back of the building, in the new bit.
She leads me along the ground floor, We follow signs down a main hallway, and then around a room labeled as a chapel to another lobby. This one's smaller, shabbier. There's blood on the linoleum. That's the first thing I notice. Pools of it, drawing a path in either direction away from the stairwell that leads up to the antenna tower. I exchange a look with Reese. It's a lot. More than anybody could really stand to lose.
Left or right?
Reese says. We head left. Follow the signs for the event room. A bank of windows opens up, and inside, the room is all gurneys and curtains and tears in the linoleum tile. Along the far wall, a small row of cabinets and a sink, a wet bar for the parties nobody ever had here. And above the cabinets, papered over but showing through, posters advertising all Rackster has to offer.
Where do you think they went? Reese asks.
The doctors, I mean. Back to the base on the coast, maybe? This place is far enough from school that we wouldn't see if anybody came to get them. The door's open, the trail of blood disappearing through it. And I go first, take careful steps into the ward. Four beds, three slept in. Across from me, one bed is rumpled, the covers thrown off, an IV stand knocked over next to it. Red stains are smeared across the floor. Reese picks up the clipboard tied to the foot of the gurney and scans it.
This is her. There. See? By it, Windsor.
She really was here. But I'm too late. I'm always too late. I turn, scanning the rest of the room for some sort of clue, when I notice the bed to the left of the door. It's drenched, the covers soaked with deep maroon splotches. In the middle of it all, there's a scalpel, glinting softly in the flickering light. And there's something else, too. Hey, I say, and Reese turns. Look.
What the hell is that?
We inch closer. It's not moving, but Rackster taught me not to trust my eyes. Things can be dangerous long after they're dead.
Is that a worm? Reese says.
It's caked in dried blood, but underneath I can see pale, translucent flesh. And somehow it looks familiar. I've never seen it before, I'm sure of that. But there's a twitch in my gut. Like, answering like. The worm and the scalpel. And I can put it together now. By it, here, with a scalpel in her hand, digging through her insides until she found what she was looking for. That was inside her, I say. And then, because we're both thinking it, there's one inside us too, isn't there? It's the tox. Parasites, living in our bodies, making us their own, using those who can take it, abandoning those who can't, protecting themselves at all costs. Inside me, inside the animals, inside Rackster, making us wild. I can't keep looking at it. I bend over, convulsing as I dry heave.
It's okay,
Reese says, rubbing my back.
I want it out of me.
Tears spring to my eye and I'm breathing too fast. I have to slow down. I have to.
Please, get it out.
We can't do that. I straighten. Push her arm off me.
Don't you want it out of you? We don't know what might happen if we try. We could bleed to death.
Reese tucks my hair behind my ears, gives me a shaky smile. She's trying so hard to make it okay.
We'll figure it out, she says. We'll figure it all out.
I don't understand. How could we not know?
It must have grown. It would have been small to start with. Microscopic.
But, and I feel lost, like the whole world's learned a new language and left me out of it. What about tests? Our blood tests and physicals? And why now? Why us?
I don't know,
Reese says. She goes back to the clipboard from by its bed and starts flipping through the papers collected there. I wish I could be like her. I wish I could let go of things when there's nothing to be done. I stand next to her, read over her shoulder and catch words here and there that I know. Estrogen, adapting, and over again, failure. But most of it's all charts and numbers. Are the answers in there somewhere? More charts, more paragraphs done in unreadable handwriting. And Reese flicks through quickly, barely looking at them, until she stops on one page. What is it? She folds over the corner, then dumps our backpack out on the mattress, fishes through it for the records we took from the school. Reese?
I thought I recognized this, she says,
and lays out the pieces of paper. Twin graphs, with analysis printed below in text so small I'd need a magnifying glass to make it out.
It tracks the climate,
Reese explains, pointing to one axis where years are listed. The year of the talks is highlighted on one copy, yellow ink faded and bleeding.
The average temperature on Raxter over time. Look, it goes way back.
One copy in the school records, and another here in a makeshift hospital, pinned to by its bed. And there it is. The climate changing. The temperature rising. I read once about creatures trapped in the Arctic ice. Prehistoric ancient things, coming awake as the ice melts. In Maine, on Raxter, a parasite slowly reaching into the weakest things. The irises, the crabs, until it was strong enough to reach into the wilderness, into us. Chapter 26. Reese keeps staring at the graphs, and I take the clipboard from the bed, peer at the rest of the documents. Observations made about a patient, BW. And on the bottom of every form, the same signature. I can't read it, but there's a printed name underneath, under attending doctor. Audrey Peretta, I read. That was by its doctor. Headmistress said they dosed her with the gas. It would have been Peretta who did it, who made the decision to kill my best friend. If she were here, I'd tear her eyes out with my bare hands.
She got evacuated, Reese says gently. There's nothing we can do about her right now.
I nod, push the thought of Peretta out of my head, and keep flipping through the clipboard. Tests and tests, and none of them working. The tox too strong to die, and us too weak to live. Rax 009, they labeled her. Eight others, then, and I think of Mona in that body bag. Welch said that night that they thought they'd gotten it right. They must have sent Mona back to school, waited to see if she would last, if the cure they'd found would hold. But she didn't, and it didn't. And I bet she's somewhere in this building, eyes wide and staring, body stiff and sliced open for answers. The story was hers, too. I give Reese another minute to poke through the room, let her gather up the documents from by its bed, and shove them back into the bag. When she finishes, we both head for the door. There's nothing more we need in here, and the jets will be overhead soon enough. It's time to get by it. We follow the blood back out of the ward, down the hallway and through the lobby. It leads past the stairwell and along a narrowing corridor that twists sharply. The trail gets fainter, but it doesn't give out, and here and there, scattered along the wall, are handprints, as if somebody leaned on it to keep themselves upright. After a third corner, the air begins to smell of the outside, fresh and clean. I speed up, Reese at my shoulder, and then it's there, a door, dented and half open, and beyond it, grass and daylight. I slam through it, stumble out into a small pockmarked yard, a chain-link fence closing us in, and beyond it, trees bristling thick with leaves. This must be around the back of the building, pressed up right against the woods. Above us, the sky is vivid blue, uncluttered with clouds. I almost don't see her. A ways down, propped up against the wall of the center, body so small and crumpled, jacket wrapped tight around what's left of her.
buy it?
I'm running, feet pounding the earth, and I crash to my knees by her side. It's a mess. It's awful. But I can't look away. Snow scattered across her dark hair, a bandage around her arm, soaked through with blood. Her skin so pale I can almost see through it, and a Raxter iris clutched in her pure black fingers. She's cold. Her body's so cold.
Buy it. Buy it. Hey, come on. It's me. It's Hetty.
No answer. I feel for a pulse at her neck, but I'm shaking too hard, and she's looking right at me. Eyes bright and warm, just the way I remember them. Only there's nothing behind them now. No life, no hidden place. I stroke her hair back. And it's a year ago and a month ago, and the first day we met all at once. Buy it sneaking me food from the kitchen. Buy it calling my parents for me when I failed a test. Buy it saving me a seat during evening mass. Buy it. Buy it holding me through nightmares. Always walking on my blind side and resting her hand on my elbow until I learn not to need it. My friend, my sister, part of who I am.
The doctor's dosed her with the gas,
Reese says, and I drag myself back to the world.
She must have known she was dying.
Buy it. With the end almost on her, taking her body back, coming out here, away from where they put her. A sob shatters me and I press my face into the curve of Byatt's neck, give over to the shake of my body. Headmistress told me, but I couldn't believe it. Byatt's too big. Too much to ever disappear. How could anybody do this to her? How could Peretta have met her and not seen what she's worth?
What do you want to do?
Reese asks when I've quieted.
I don't think we can take her.
What?
We can't stay here forever. The school's probably destroyed by now, and the jets will be here soon.
I'm not leaving her, I say, adjusting Byatt's jacket.
But
I said I'm not leaving her. And I don't know how we're getting around this, because I'm not giving in, and neither is Reese. I can see it in the set of her jaw. Staying here is dangerous. I know that. But after everything I've done to find Byatt, I'm not leaving her now. Reese sighs, and it looks like she's about to say something when there's a cough. A slight hitch in breathing, and I jump. Turn slowly, almost afraid to look. She's alive. Byatt, chest barely moving, eyes blinking as she opens her mouth.
Oh my God.
I brace my hand behind her head to support her neck.
Byatt, can you hear me?
Finally, she tilts her head, and she looks at me, and I can feel the smile slip from my face. Something's off. Byatt?
What is it?
Reese says. I'm not sure. I take Byatt's hand in mine, press it against my cheek.
It's me. It's Hetty.
Nothing. No recognition. By its face, but nobody's there.
I don't understand,
Reese says.
They gave her the gas. How is she still alive?
I look down at her hand, limp and bony in mine, and the bandage on her arm, the edges of a gash peeking out from underneath.
She's alive because she took it out, I say.
What? The gas was supposed to kill the tox, but she took it out. So there was nothing for it to kill. Byatt's eyes unfocus, leaving her staring just over my shoulder. And it's like she came out with it. Her personality. Her everything. Reese crouches down at Byatt's feet, and we watch Byatt's head slowly swing around to look at her. At first, I think there's something. A spark in her. But it's gone before I'm sure I saw it.
Let's see if she can move. Reese says, you're not strong enough to help, and I'm not sure I can get her to the boat carrying her on my own.
Too hurt, she means, but she'd never say it. Not even now, after everything. I get on one side, and Reese gets on the other, and together, We're heaving by it to our feet when a low roar kicks up, soft but growing in the distance. The jets. My mouth goes dry. Fear lifting the hair on the back of my neck. Shit, I say. We have to hurry. Byatt's steps are halting, like she's only just learning how to move her limbs. But we start heading for the door back into the center. Inside then, and down hallway after hallway, I'm fading, strength leeching out of me, and every step we take is slower than the last until we reach the main lobby, noon sun sneaking through the boarded-up windows. We stop, lean Byatt up against the desk so I can rest for a moment. I can feel Reese watching me. She's waiting for me to say it, for me to leave Byatt behind. But she'll be waiting a long time. Come on, I say. Now or never. Out across the marsh. There's our boat on the beach. And it's so far, and I'm losing my will. But Reese says my name once, just once. Stern and strong. And she believes I can do this. So I have to. A whistle, and a huge rush of freezing air. Get down, I have time to say before a trio of fighter jets comes swooping overhead. It's so loud I can't think, can't do anything but endure it. They're flying too low. We have to go now. They disappear then, circling around for another pass, and I hoist by it farther up with my good arm. Come on! At last, the pier, and we scramble down the shore as fast as we can, by its feet dragging in the sand. Carefully, we drape her body between the seats, and her eyes are closed, but she's breathing. She's alive. Get in, Reese says. I'll shove us out. The sway of the water, the rev of the engine, Reese at the stern as the boat eases away. A quick turn, and we're skimming along, the island blurring until it's lost in the spray, farther, farther, until I can't hear the jets. The snow stops, and the day grows warm. The ocean throwing shimmer across my sight, the hull of the boat spangled with water light. I lose minutes, hours, staring at the horizon, trying to make out the low-slung buildings of Camp Nash. But the mainland blurs, and it never seems closer, no matter how Reese steers us against the waves. We're still miles away from shore when she cuts the engine with a frustrated groan. I start, rubbing at my blind eye. What are you doing?
Current's pulling us away from the inlet. We won't gain any ground like this.
So we're just stopping?
Until the tide changes.
She pushes her hair out of her face and gets to her feet, the boat sloshing to one side.
We only have so much fuel. It's a waste to use it now.
Reese steps over by its prone body to sit next to me at the bow of the boat. Why it looks so strange. Her face slack, her eyes closed. There was always something sparking about her, even when she slept. It's gone now, or different somehow.
What's he like?
Reese asks suddenly.
Your dad, I mean.
I don't know. It falls out of my mouth before I can stop it.
It's true, really.
But I know that's not what she's looking for. He comes home from deployment, and he goes away again. Reese tilts her head.
And you love him?
Of course I do. I just don't know him. It doesn't make sense to her, I know, and I want to explain, to tell her how he doesn't live in my heart the way her father lived in hers. But I don't get the chance. My body twists, chest wrenching to one side, and I feel my throat thicken with spit.
Hetty?
The fever in the marsh, outside the visitor center. The one by its body burned out of my mind. I should have recognized the sign. It sizzles through my body and settles in the pit of my stomach, and there's something heavy inside. I gag, lean over the side of the boat, and spit out a watery mouthful of bile. I can feel an object in my throat, but I can't get it out. Help, I manage, and Reese is tugging me around to face her, eyes wild. I have to, another racking shiver, blood trickling down my chin. You have to get it out. She looks at me blankly, and then I see it click.
Okay.
I sit astride the bench, and Reese mirrors me, my hand braced on her thigh, her silver fingers gripping the back of my neck.
Tell me if you want me to stop, she says.
I shake my head. Not until it works. I open my mouth, and Reese sticks two fingers as deep into my throat as she can. I can't breathe. A cough building in my chest, but I can't get it out. Can't swallow. And a wave rolls through my body as it tries to force Reese out. My eyes water and the world is hazy, distorted. But something is moving, stuck, halfway down. I smack at Reese's arm and she pulls her arm back, dragging strings of spit. First one heave, and another, until finally I vomit. Pain everywhere like my insides have been torn out. Something fleshy and pulsing splatters onto the deck of the boat. I wipe my mouth on my sleeve. Whatever it is, it's covered in blood. But it looks familiar. Like I've seen the shape of it somewhere before. In a textbook. In a body. In the woods with Mr. Harker.
It's a heart, Reese says. That's a human heart.
This one shrunken, shriveled. And mine still beating in my chest. I look away. Collapse against Reese, head spinning. She loops her arm around my waist.
Doesn't someone at school have that?
She says. Sarah, I say. Two heartbeats. But two hearts instead. And if her body kept hers, why couldn't mine? I think of Byatt and me on the beach that day before I got boat shift. The last moment we had before it all went haywire. The crab she found, the Raxter Blue, with lungs and gills both like we learned every year in bio. Lungs and gills both. So it could live no matter what. The tox, working in the Raxter Blue in everything. And in me. It's trying to help, I say. It's trying to make me better. But I can't take it. Reese pushes my hair off the back of my neck to let the breeze cool it. Calm down, it's okay. I cough, blood tangy and metallic on my tongue, and Reese pulls me in so I'm leaning against her chest. The boat sways, salt spice in the air. I close my eye, shut out the glare of the water and the pallor of Byatt's skin. I'm fine. I just need the rest. The three of us together, laid out in the quiet. We've been here before. One weekend during my first year at Raxter. Byatt got a run in her last pair of tights, and Mr. Harker drove us to the mainland to get our new ones. We were supposed to meet him in the park when we were done, but he was late. So we stretched out in the dappled shade under a low, sprawling oak. The leaves turned translucent in the light, the air fresh and sweet. Byatt in the middle, me and Reese on either side. And it was the first time we let the quiet be. The first time we were ever really us.
You're gonna be okay,
Reese whispers. And I let it push me further into sleep.
You saved me. Now I'm gonna save you.
I don't know where we're going. I don't know what's next. But Reese's heartbeat is steady in my ear. And I remember how it was, the three of us together, and I'll make it that way again.
This concludes the reading of Wilder Girls by Rory Power, copyright 2019 by Nikki Power. This book was read by Eileen Stevens and Jesse Valinsky. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Inkwell Management and was produced in 2019 by Blackstone Publishing, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-SAY-BOOK. 929-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.